Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, Tenet, Desert One, and Class Action Park. Hello, David.
Hello, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Will not complain.
Glad to hear that. Well, you know what I did yesterday? I did something yesterday that was bold and daring and perhaps foolhardy. I went to the movies.
I was going to guess that.
First time I've done this in a very, very long time, and I wasn't sure if I was going to do it. And I'll tell you what I did was... I decided to go to an afternoon showing, which is my preference anyway, when I go to the movies. And, you know, if I got there and there were a lot of people in the auditorium, then I was simply going to turn around and go home. I was not going to risk my life for the sake of seeing the new Christopher Nolan movie. But I thought, oh, you know, I'll give this a shot. Also, this is kind of interesting because Tenet, which is the name of the new Christopher Nolan movie, has been really very much in the sort of movie news recently, precisely because of the shutdowns and the coronavirus and so forth, because Nolan has been refusing to have this movie released digitally streaming, and so people can look it on the small screen at home. He said, you know, this is a big screen experience, and it's meant to be seen in a movie theater with lots of people. And so Hollywood has been sort of really, really hoping that this film would be a grand reopening of the movie-going habit, and that people would flock out to see Tenet, and then we would all be going back to the movies. Well, this has not happened. So quite apart from my experience yesterday, it turns out that Tenet has really not attracted a whole lot of people to go back to the movies. Initially, some figures were released that it was doing pretty well at the box office, but then those figures turned out to include preview showings and things like that. And the point is, it has not done very well, and America is not flocking back to the movies. That said, I did go to the movies yesterday, and I decided, since this is such a big screen experience, to go to a theater that was showing it in IMAX. And when I got there, you know, this is how it was. I would say that in the big IMAX auditorium that I went to, there were probably about a half a dozen other people there. They were nowhere near each other, except for, you know, couples who came together. And they were nowhere near me. And as far as I could tell, everybody had masks, as did I. And the point is, I felt perfectly socially distanced from everybody there, and there were very few people, and I think it was all quite safe. So that's the story about the movie-going experience. Now for the movie itself. Christopher Nolan is an interesting filmmaker who has made some interesting movies. I've spoken with him briefly in my time. Seems to be a nice fellow. He is probably best known for Memento and Inception and a big science fiction movie. That one was Interstellar, very, very big science fiction movie. Big, I mean, in terms of size and running time and so forth. His most recent film, Dunkirk, which was a World War II movie, and not bad at all. I saw it more than once, in fact. So now we come up to Tenet, which is a science fiction movie, and it is, I think, absolutely terrible. Yes, it is big, it is bruising, it is full of sights and sounds, it's full of action and adventure and that kind of thing, but I found it really, really, really just uninvolving, uninteresting. There's been talk about how the movie doesn't have any emotional impact. Well, it sure doesn't. No psychological impact, nothing along those lines. It is really basically just a big, empty action show. So, for the plot, I won't even attempt to reproduce the plot of the movie. Let's just say that it has to do with artifacts which are somehow arriving in the present time from the future, and the movie has a whole lot to do with the idea of time running forward or backward. The title Tenet, T-E-N-E-T, is a palindrome which reads the same way, forward and backward. And the movie has to do all with that sort of thing. Again, it's a science fiction movie, and so all of this is just fine for subject matter. There has been, I have discovered now, some a lot of complaining about people being unable to understand the dialogue of the movie, what people are saying to each other in the movie. And I sure had that trouble in the big IMAX theater that I was in yesterday. It's really hard, especially near the beginning of the film, to make out what people are saying, especially when they're wearing gas masks and that sort of thing. And since this is a movie with a very involved narrative, you really do want to know what's going on. And it is not all that easy to know what's going on. So that's one of the problems with the movie. I have to say, I sort of realized that Tenet was probably not going to be for me in the first few minutes. It starts out with this big, huge, slam-bang action sequence where some bad people barge into a concert hall and render the audience unconscious, and everybody is shooting and running and jumping, and the thing is, you don't know who these people are. There's no reason why you should care. And from there, the movie just kept going the same way. It reminded me of the old James Bond movies. I mean the earlier James Bond movies. It's full of these set pieces and these action movie cliches, one after another. So I think I'm getting my point across. For me, Tenet was a very, by the way, about 2.5 hours long, a very, very uninvolving, uninteresting experience. If you are interested in pure action thrills and don't mind a sort of a retro quality to it all, then by all means, go see Tenet. But for me, I just found it a big, empty, bombastic bore. So much for my opinion of Tenet, which I didn't much like.
Loved now it, huh?
Sorry, Jill?
I said you loved it, huh?
I loved it. I have to say, I love venting about it a little bit right now. I did not much enjoy watching it, no. By the way, it has, a very good cast, very nice people in it. John David Washington is a wonderful actor, very likable. He's really the most memorable figure in the movie. Robert Pattinson is okay. But anyway, the movie did not click with me. I want to talk now about a couple of documentaries, the first one of which is called Desert One, and which is by Barbara Kopple, one of the really major American documentary filmmakers. She is best known, I think, still to this day, for her first documentary, Harlan County, USA. She also made American Dream some years ago. She's a very, very fine and intelligent maker of documentaries. And Desert One is certainly an interesting movie. It's about, as people might recognize from the title, it's about after the American hostages were seized by Iranians back in Iran in 1979, and things were not going well, and efforts to get the hostages back were not going well, and Jimmy Carter, who was president then, was suffering very, very badly politically because of this ongoing crisis, and Carter, being the humanitarian that he is, was determined to end this whole thing, get the hostages back, and end the crisis through diplomacy. And it was just not working. And every single thing that they were trying to do, was being rejected by Ayatollah Khomeini, who was at that time the leader of Iran after the Iranian Revolution that threw out the Shah, and things were just not going well. And so eventually, Jimmy Carter, hesitantly and reluctantly, did okay a rescue mission which had been planned out and proposed to him, and that became this mission known as Desert One. So that is what the documentary is about. So basically, this movie is just looking back in a very, very straightforward nonfiction way at this rescue mission of the very early 1980s. And of course, the famous thing about the Desert One rescue mission is that it utterly failed. So this is a very interesting subject, an American mission launched with all the might and all the planning skill and logistical brilliance of the American military and the American government generally, and it simply, utterly, utterly failed. And that is what the movie, again, details in very harrowing way. There's a lot of interviews, talking head in interviews with the people who were involved in the mission and also their spouses, people remembering what happened, what it was like. like to be summoned on this utterly top secret mission and what it was like to actually participate in it. And there's a fair amount of footage showing not only the hostage crisis itself, but various things that happened during the mission. And it was just, one doesn't even want to call it a comedy of errors because it was a tragedy of errors. This went wrong, that went wrong. They were meant to be a certain number of helicopters, and then one was lost, and then another one was lost, and so now there really weren't enough helicopters. There was a helicopter that really could not fly under these circumstances, and everybody knew that under these circumstances, this kind of helicopter cannot high fly, but they had to make the helicopter fly anyway, and, you know, with results that can be predicted. And anyway, it was a very, very sad thing. A number of people died, some of them in pretty horrible ways, and again, the movie gets into all of this and details it without ever sensationalizing anything, and there's always an undertone of sorrow to the movie. Nobody is happy that this mission failed, but it has to be told, and the story is now told, I think, probably more thoroughly than it's ever been told before, certainly in the movies. Again, Barbara Kopple really knows what she's doing. She knows how to put together a good, lucid, very straightforward and utterly cleared documentary that tells a story in a compelling way. I have to say, if one of the things about Tenet, the big screen fiction movie of the moment, is that it is rather incoherent in all kinds of ways. Desert One is admirably coherent, the kind of documentary that we often see on television nowadays, and in fact, this one is streaming and is easy to get a hold of, but it certainly is visually compelling as well as narratively compelling, and it returns us to a time when that we may not remember all that well, and which is certainly worth remembering, because this was an important moment in America's history with Iran, and an important moment politically as well. Of course, Ronald Reagan pretty much swept into the presidency, partly because of how bad everything about the hostage crisis had gone for the outgoing President Carter, and the movie ends telling about that little sort of epilogue to the hostage crisis, and it makes for a very poignant finale to the movie. So Desert One, an American history documentary that I can recommend quite highly. And I'd like to touch briefly on one more documentary, a movie called Class Action Park, directed by Seth Porges and Charles Scott III. And this is a movie about a New Jersey amusement park called Action Park. And it was very, very, very popular. People really liked to go to this. It opened up back in 1978, and it was in operation for quite a few years. And it was a really popular park, and it was the kind of place where you could go and enjoy exciting rides with names like the Kayak Experience and the Cannonball Loop, rides that were a lot of fun. It was not only rides, there were other things you could do when you were there, but it was famous for its rides. And what then started to become famous was the fact that some of these rides were really not very well planned out, not very well engineered, and were simply not very safe. And accidents started to happen. And so I may sound like I'm sort of enjoying talking about this. And again, some bad things happened at this park. Some people actually died because of the lack of safety of these rides. But I guess that one can look back on it with at least a certain satisfaction that probably a park this badly designed and this badly run and this actually dangerous probably, at least one hopes, could not exist now. And in fact, the title of the movie, which is very ironic, Class Action Park. Again, the name of the place was Action Park. Class actions are, of course, lawsuits that people undertake when they feel they've been damaged in some way, and that became a nickname for the park because, in fact, there were lawsuits about some of the dangers posed by some of these rides and some of these experiences that people were having there. So you find out that there was this thing called, for example, the Cannonball Loop, and you would go zipping down through this sort of water slide, and then you would go through a loop-the-loop where you actually went upside down, and then you came down at the bottom. And, you know, when this thing was built, they weren't really sure if it would work or not, so they had to sort of get volunteers who would go through it and hope they wouldn't somehow be shredded or pulverized or mangled on their way through. And then sure enough, they found out some people were able to get through it without being shredded, pulverized, or mangled, and so, okay, we can open this one now, even though, yeah, it was not, shall we say, 100% safe, and you wouldn't necessarily necessarily want to put your grandmother on it, or maybe even yourself. And that's kind of the way it went. And that is the kind of thing that the movie details. So much of the movie tells about the opening of the park and about the various sort of shortcuts that were taken and the tribulations that resulted from this. And then there's a lot of focus on one particular person who was very much involved in the park and in its management and so forth, and who apparently was not being at all responsible about these dangers, even when they became pretty well known. And so there's a whole lot of talk about that and about this particular figure and about these basically what seems to me to be flat-out irresponsible action that happened, and attempts of the community to deal with this and so forth. And yeah, the place did not last forever. But I'm sure a lot of people had a tremendous amount of fun going to Action Park, and I'm sure that some people gained quite a lot from lawsuits resulting from going to what became known as Glass Action Park. Now, to look at it as a movie, again, there's a certain kind of nostalgia to it. We hope that this sort of thing doesn't happen nowadays, that amusement parks are all much more safe and sound than they were once upon a time. Looking at this movie as a kind of a nostalgia trip, but it's a kind of nostalgia where you say, gosh, I hope that sort of thing isn't still with us. It probably is, but let's hope it isn't. So again, Glass Action Park, which by the way has become a phenomenally popular streaming movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but people are sure enjoying looking at it. So as a sort of entertainment documentary, this is probably the movie of the moment. So that is my somewhat science fictional, somewhat non-fictional story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as ever, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Tenet, Desert One, and Glass Action Park.